episode 88 of
Brutal Battle.
And that right there is Sean Creel. Yes, Sean Creel is back.
Hello, hello.
It's been a while, Sean. The last time it was just you and I on this podcast was when we did that epic Heady Topper Pliny the Elder head-to-head, if
you
remember.
That was a fun show.
That was. I'm pretty sure that was the last time it was just the two of us.
I think so, yeah.
Good memories, good times. So Sean's back. I'm really excited to have you back because you're...
So are we tasting Heady again?
No, we're not. Oh, no. I actually do
Oh, wait a minute. Never mind. I gotta go.
Yeah. I do have some Plinies up in the fridge. Oh. Two, actually. But the one of them is for something else. So I don't know. Maybe at some point you can have some of one. I don't know.
I see how it is. It's all right.
I'm saving it for other people. You know, like, hey, you're thanks. Not the most important person.
That's fair enough. Thanks for having me back. It's always a fun time to be on the show.
So. Good, good. Well, let's go ahead and talk about it. It's hop knowledge. And today we're going to be doing two because the first one's actually a discontinued hop. The first one's Mount Rainier. Yeah. It was originally cultivated in Oregon. Mount Rainier has a complex parentage, basically. It includes Hallertau, Galena, Fuggle, and a few other hops. And apparently it exhibits some of the noble hop characteristics. Well, did. It's not really being used.
Yeah, I mean, it's grown from a bunch of different noble hops, so it's going to carry over those characteristics coming down the line.
So you're the guy who has more info on this. I just kind of, like, read stuff.
I don't have a whole lot more info on that one, but yeah, I mean, the parent hops for that are, several of them are noble hop varieties, so it's going to carry over the characteristics from it, so.
Makes sense. Apparently, the aroma is much reminiscent of licorice. And it has, like, a hint of citrus to it, so.
So the flavor profile is very different on that one. I think, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think, like, the alpha and beta acid characteristics are relatively low. I might be wrong about that, but I think they're, like, the thing about the noble hops is that they're, the ratio of alpha to beta acid is very similar. So that basically the alpha is going to be your bitterness, and then the beta is going to be more of the harsh, the higher the beta, the more harsh the bitterness is.
Okay.
So if you have relatively low beta, you're going to have a softer bitterness. It's not going to just, like, rip the enamel off of your teeth. It's going to be an intense flavor and a big characteristic, but not overpowering.
Cool.
So
see,
I don't know if any of that makes sense.
And this is why you should just probably be on every episode, because then you can give all the extra information about the hop knowledge that I'm unable to provide. So there are no examples of beers with that hop because it's not a hop that's really
that was just kind of like an experimental variety.
Yeah. So I'll do another one. It's typically what I do. So this one is one that's actually been getting pretty popular lately. One from New Zealand, Nelson Sauvin hop.
That is one of my favorite hops.
Is it?
It was. There was Anchor came out with a beer a couple years ago called Humming Nail. I think they discontinued it, unfortunately. It was one of my favorite summer beers. It has, like, a grape characteristic coming through on it. And it's
really?
Just, like, this... It's not overpowering, but it's just a really, like, crisp, fruity, clean flavor to it.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
Cool. And I'll tell you, it's from New Zealand and apparently is named after the Sauvignon Blanc grape, which... By the way, I do like wine as well, and Sauvignon Blancs from New Zealand are some of my favorites because they're extremely... I mean, they're stainless steel tank fermentation. You know, there's no oak, which I hate oak with my white wines. So it's, like, very dry, acidic, and that's what I kind of look for.
I've been trying to learn a lot more about wines as well, because now that I'm working at Friendship Wine and Liquor, even though I'm in charge of the beer department, I'm supposed to know everything in the store, so I've been tasting a lot of different whiskeys and wines as well. And I've been talking. We've got a really good wine guy, Blair, and so every Friday and Saturday he does wine tastings.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always over at his table, tasting through everything, trying to learn as much as I can.
Actually, I might be able to teach you a few things about wine because I have a lot
awesome.
Of wine training.
Okay.
I can tell you more good about deal. That some other time. Apparently has a strong fruity flavor and an aroma that's described as resembling white wine. So when you were saying about the grapes, that's why. Or it said crushed grapes or gooseberries sometimes, actually.
Yeah.
Some people perceive the fruitiness as being tropical, with descriptions that include things like passion fruit, tangerines, as well as grapefruit. The distinctive character of the hop, hops limit its aroma and flavor usage to American ales and specialty beers. It says a bittering hop. Its low cocumulone content imparts a very smooth bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what you were talking about, because I guess the betas, it says 6-8%. Is that on the lower side?
That is on the lower side. I might have been mixing that up a little bit. It's been a little while since I've researched stuff on the hops, so it might have been more about the cohumulin. That might have been one thing I was thinking about. But
so two
6-8 is fairly low, though, okay. For the beta.
Awesome. Two examples of beers with Nelson Sauvin. One is BrewDog's Punk IPA.
Okay.
And another one is one that's become very popular and all the beer nerds want to get. Alpine Brewing's Nelson.
Oh, okay.
Obviously,
yeah.
It's named Nelson because Nelson Sauvin, ha ha ha, you know.
I have not had the chance to taste that one yet.
So, well, I mean, I've heard. Problem is you can't get Alpine Brewing out where we are, so you'd have to trade for it. trading's a pain, you know, but hey. So, since Sean's here, it's a celebration.
Cheers.
we're going to have an opening beer to taste, and... Man, this is going to be a pain in the ass. I'm working on it. It's a corking cage, and God, these...
That cage is really twisted around there.
These cages are on here. It's terrible. So, what I have here is actually a brewery that probably not a lot of people are actually going to be familiar with. Hold on, wait for it. For the pop.
Wait for it. Okay. There we go.
Well, I'm glad it popped, because gorgeous. If it didn't, I'd be like, yikes. Okay, so this is a brewery that's out of Enola, Pennsylvania. And it's called Pizza Boy Brewing Company. And it's actually a brewery that's at, like, a bar called Al's of Hampton. So, Pizza Boy, Sean showed up and he said, I didn't know they were bottling this stuff.
Yeah, I've only ever seen them on draft. And the only time I've actually ever seen them on draft was at the place that you told me about, Golden Krust.
Yes, and Golden Krust puts a lot of their stuff on draft. And that's where I got this bottle. They sent out an email, Vince up at Golden Krust, who's awesome, sent out an email saying, hey, you know, we got a limited supply of these bottles of this beer. Kind of a pricey beer, and well, we'll see if it's worth that priciness. But it is, it's called a Basio Cell, that's spelled A-B-A-S-C-I-O-C-E-L-L. And it just says it's an ale aged in oak barrels. But to get a little more information about it, it's actually an ale that is wild, so it's supposed to be sour, and it's aged in white wine barrels. So I think depending on what batch it is, it's either like Pinot Grigio or Chardonnay. I don't know, they might do something else, but that's what I know about it. I will say that...
It's kind of interesting that we're talking about the Nelson Sauvin hop, talking about the wines, and then we get this wine barrel-aged beer as well. So
yeah, and it's definitely tying in.
You can really smell the wine barrel coming through in the aroma.
Yeah, I mean, you get so much oak.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that this is like urine color. It doesn't look appealing. It actually looks like an oaked Chardonnay.
It's very cloudy.
Yeah. It looks like an oaked Chardonnay to me.
Yeah.
And there's like, I can't even see any carbonation.
It smells like a oaky Chardonnay to me, too. Kind of that crisp, tart, fruity characteristic coming through.
So maybe
a little bit of the oak tannins.
Chardonnay oak barrel that the beer was aged in. That'd be my guess on that, but I'm not really smelling like hops or anything. It smells tart, obviously.
I jumped the gun a little. I just took a sip.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
That is really tart, really tasty.
Oh my God, that's sour. It's one of those sourness, too, that... It hits your tongue and it's a little bit sour, and then it just builds,
mm-hmm.
it comes down.
It's not just like a blast of sour. It's a whole evolution of sour characteristics on your tongue.
It's really like a sour roller coaster with each sip. And man, that is like intense lemony tartness to it.
That's crazy. Very lemony. Absolutely. I mean, sometimes you get a lot of different fruit characteristics coming through on the sourness. This is really, really lemony.
Damn.
Lemon and grape, I'd say, I think.
There's no descriptor on the bottle itself, but it's 4.5% alcohol, which...
Really?
A lot of sours I had found recently kind of lower on the
leaning towards the lower side.
Yeah. So, I'm surprised at how sour this is. I wasn't sure.
This tastes like... a really sour Berliner Weiss. Like normally when you think of sour beers, you're looking at those darker, deep, like overripe fruit flavors. This is just a tartness that's like overboard, but in a good way.
Right. And the more I taste it, the more my tongue's actually getting used to the sourness. So I'm
picking up on some of the stuff underneath.
I'm picking up oak. I'm definitely picking up the oak, which is really nice at the end of the sourness. And I'm also am picking up a little bit of like a grapiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a whole lot.
Lots of complexity in this beer.
Yeah. This is one that I feel like as we keep talking and sipping on it, we might start picking out even some more things. It's definitely one that's a total shock to your palate when you first take the sip. But as you keep sipping and you're getting used to the sourness in your mouth, it's, wow, it's really opening up.
It tastes like biting into if you take like a slice of a lemon and just sprinkle just a tiny little bit of sugar on top of it and bite into that.
Yeah.
That's what this tastes like to me.
I could see that. Man. I will disclose this was a $35 bottle of wine. Oh, I'm sorry, wine. Not wine. Wine barrel-aged beer. $35 bottle of beer.
Worth it.
Yeah,
I am enjoying this a lot.
This is a nice, nice beer. All right,
a lot of times on the price point on these beers, when it comes to the sour stuff, these take a lot longer for breweries to make. It's storing, it's sitting in either barrels, which could be taking the place of fermenters, or in fermenters, where they could be churning through their regular beer. So you have to think about the lost profits that they have from what they could have been making in that space. Because it takes, you know, anywhere from like 1 to 3 years to make these sour beers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and okay, this is going to kind of lead to another conversation, and we were going to talk about something else this episode, but I'm going to table that for the next episode.
Okay.
Because I want to get into this. When I think about Owls of Hampton, Pizza Boy, in mm-hmm. this instance, you know, you're talking about, you know, they have to have the beer sitting in these barrels to age for a certain amount of time. That's taking up a lot of space that they don't have a whole lot of space.
Yeah.
So, yes, the price point's higher, but that also leads me to when I think about breweries that release beer and they say, go ahead and age it. Like, I know that Deschutes out of Oregon will say, like, here's the beer.
That's one of the few breweries.
Age it for X years.
Yeah. Most breweries will release the beer when they think it's ready to drink, and then you can age it an additional amount if you want to. Mm-hmm. Deschutes, that's kind of a interesting way that they do that with their special releases, where they basically have dates on them a year out from when they release it. They tell you that the beer is not ready. Age it yourself.
Yeah.
So I have mixed views on that. I think it's interesting. I think it's something that helps educate people, letting them know that you can age beers and they'll change over time. But at the same time, it's nice when a brewery releases a beer that's ready to drink.
So. Right. And that's the thing. Like, I'm torn on it too, because I feel like I can't fault the brewery for not holding on to a ton of beer and just having all their space taken up by these, you know, beers that are in barrels. I know that like Goose Island, they had to buy like a whole nother building to house like Bourbon County Stout, you know? And so that's a pain. So I'm sure these brewers, some of them, you know, or at least in Deschutes' case, looking at this and saying, do you really want to take a ton of beer and just have it sit and take up tons of space and then sell it, when what we can just do is turn around, sell it as soon as it's done, and say, hey, if you age it 1 year, if you age it 2 years, whatever, it's going to be even better. So go ahead and do it on your own.
Yeah.
So I see it that way. But on the other hand, it's frustrating from the standpoint of being a beer consumer.
Takes some self-control. I've got, you know, I got three bottles of Deschutes down in my basement that I can't drink for a year. So,
well, let me give you a good example. I was texting recently with Nathan Kolasnik, who's been on the show, and he was saying that he had recently purchased a bottle of Dogfish Head's Worldwide Stout.
Oh yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna try and age it for 3 years. It'll be tough, but I'm gonna try and age it for 3 years. And I said, well, you know what's even better is 5 years on that beer. And he's like, God, that's hard. You know, like, it's just kind of tough. And it is to, like, sit it in your cellar or in your fridge or wherever you're going to keep it.
Just got to put it out of sight, out of sight, out of mind.
And that's basically what I said to him. I'm like, you know, put it somewhere where you're probably going to forget about it. Because with a beer like Worldwide Stout, you'll find it eventually. And it'll be good whenever you do find it years down the road.
It won't go bad.
And like when I had aged my...
To 10 years later, you'll find it and it'll still be a good
beer. Yeah, Exactly. Well, when I had aged that 5.5-year-old 120 minute by Dogfish
that
Head,
was phenomenal.
That was accidental. I had held on to it, and it ended up somewhere that I didn't know where it was, because we were living in an apartment at one point, and then we moved, and when I moved, that beer ended up somewhere else. So I didn't see it for a while, and then it got to a point where I was like, oh, this beer is like 4 years old. And then I was like, oh, I wonder what it's going to be like. So then I was waiting for the right time, and then that was another year and a half later, and I was like, okay, finally, it's time to do something with this. So yeah,
I had an awesome customer at work bring me in a bottle of Brooklyn's Black Chocolate Stout. It's from 09. So I don't know how he kept on to it that long, but and I was very thankful he shared that with me. So I'm saving that for something. I don't know when I'll break that one out, but you know, it's fun to do, to put stuff away and hold on to it for a while and just see how it changes. One thing I always stress to people though is make sure you try the beer fresh, so that when you've aged it for 5 years or however many years you're going to age it for, you know what that aging has actually done. Right. Try it when it's fresh and see what the characteristics of the beer are right away, and then see how it evolves and changes over time. If you can get a hold of a couple of them, try it at a couple different points and see how it goes.
That's why it's great for people to do verticals, and that's something that I've been wanting to do. Thanks to Sean, I might be able to start up a vertical of Firestone Walker's Velvet Merkin.
Glad I could help.
Yeah, because I have a 2013 bottle, and he let me know about them getting 2014 bottles, so I was able to get a 2014. So I'm hoping that...
a very limited release of that one.
So I'm hoping that I can get a 2015, 2016, and maybe do at some point like a 5-year vertical with people that I like. Sean, you would be part of the 5-year vertical.
You let me know about that.
Yeah. So as long as you keep letting me know about these coming out, you will be a part of that master plan.
We can work that out.
Make that happen. Good. That's something I've been wanting to kind of talk about, which is like the releasing of the beers. So in conclusion, like, I don't have a hard stance on it. I don't say, you know, I hate breweries for releasing the beers and then saying you age them, or
I'll tell you what, if you're making beers as good as the beers that Deschutes is making and putting those don't drink until dates on there, I don't care what you do. They make awesome beer. So I am looking forward to breaking those open, probably on the dates that they say to drink them, because I have some self-control issues, but
it's an exercise of self-control. It really is. And if you're able to do it, I'd recommend it. You know, go out and get like a worldwide stout, try and age it for 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, get like...
I love that one at 2 years.
Get six of them.
We did the worldwide stout on the one tournament we had.
Mm-hmm.
That at 2 years, that was like, that was one of the best beers I've ever tasted.
Yeah.
I've had it beyond that, and it's phenomenal.
Yes.
Anytime you try that beer. But at 2 years, there was something about that. It was just totally different from anything that I've tasted in that style.
Honestly, I don't like it fresh.
Yeah, it's a little intense. Like it fresh. There's a lot of stuff going on. It needs a little bit of time to mellow out, some of the alcohol to drop out a little bit, some of the flavors to just kind of mesh together.
So I will tell you one instance where I was a little upset about the beer not being held. Well, it was kind of a different instance. I went and checked out a local brewery, Jailbreak Brewing.
Oh, yeah.
And they really do some awesome stuff. Like, they have a jalapeno IPA called Welcome to Scoville, which is crazy good.
We have an Imperial Scoville, which is also really good.
Yes, the Imperial version is even better than the regular version. But they had, when I went there, a lot of the beers that they have, they just started canning recently.
Yeah.
And a lot of the beers that they have are just, you know, growler fill to take from the brewery. And I tried their Dusk Till Dawn, which was an Imperial Stout.
Okay.
It's like 10% alcohol. And I tried it, and I really didn't like it because it was just so aggressive. It reminded me of fresh worldwide stout.
Gotcha.
But even more alcohol forward, like dominating alcohol.
It'd be one if you could get it in a bottle and age it for a little while.
Exactly. And that was my frustration, because I was like, I have a feeling that this beer could turn into something really good.
It's
but
just not ready.
Yeah, if you're just serving it and with growler fills, I kind of feel like they shouldn't have even made the beer. or made it for themselves like a small batch and then be like, okay, when we can can or when we can bottle, let's put it out. And then we can recommend.
Just store it in kegs. Just hold on to it for a
while. But here's the thing. They're relatively new, so do they really have the space to do that? And that's where you get into that whole thing. Like, should we be holding it? So I don't blame them, but... And it's one beer
If they're listening, I'll take one and I'll hold it for them.
Okay, there you go. But and I would say that it's one beer that I had that I did not enjoy from them, and I had like eight, and I enjoyed the other seven. So
most of the stuff they're making is really good. I haven't had that one personally, but I have enjoyed everything I've had from them.
They make a great really double IPA, stuff. Big Punisher.
I mean, that's
really good.
I just had that the other day. I had it after like about a week after it was brewed or canned, and fabulous beer.
It's good.
At first, it wasn't. I didn't think it was anything special, but I had it a little bit cold. I just pulled it out of the fridge. I let it warm up for a little bit. I let it sit out on the table, and I came back to it, and it was just like this amazing bouquet of like these tropical fruit flavors coming through. I'm not sure what hops they use in there, but it's really, really tasty.
Well, that's just like, you know, like Heady Topper is the same way for me. You know, I prefer to let Heady Topper warm up. It really opens up. I mean, if you drink it cold, it's still really good. But it's not nearly as good as when you let it warm up. So
I try to educate people about that every day. I mean, we got our growler station at work now, and everything we...
By the way, people may be confused by what he's talking about. Well, next episode, we'll get into...
I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but...
What he's
done. Anyway, we store our beer at 37 degrees, because that's the best... You know, we want to keep it cold for storage purposes. It holds up the quality of the beer better. But when I'm pouring samples for people, it makes it, you know... I got to tell them to roll the cup around in your hands a little bit to warm it up to get the characteristics, because you should be drinking it at minimum at least 5 degrees higher than when it's pouring
right
out.
Right.
So
yeah, that happens. Cool. Well, good conversation.
Sure.
Thank you. Guess what time it is? It's time for a mystery of beers.
Oh, I like this time.
Yeah, man.
Mystery beers are my favorite.
When was the last time you did a mystery beer? Well, I mean, I know the tournaments,
it's been a little while.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Well, let me go ahead and say that A and B look like day and night, basically.
Yeah.
A is hazy and yellow.
Is this daytime and nighttime
basically.
From Lagunitas?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. And then the B is just, like, really dark. Although it looks kind of, like, reddish-brown around the edges.
Yeah, when you hold it up to the light, there is a little bit of color coming through there.
Yeah. So A's got a really white head to it. Pretty decent head for just sitting there for a while in the glass.
They've been sitting here for a little, about 10, 15 minutes, so
yeah,
it still has a little bit of head on the top here.
Yeah, but it's hazy. I mean, I can't see. It's very yellow, hazy. Mm-hmm. Can't see through it. Smell it.
I don't see anything floating around. It's not like particles or anything. It's just a general haze.
I smell
like
an
interesting
skunk.
Smell.
It's like skunky hops.
Definitely a little bit of funkiness. Yeah.
It's not skunky like it's a old bad beer, like it's been sun damaged or anything like that. It's skunky like there
it's like
are
an
hops.
Earthy hop variety. Yeah. I can't tell if it's something from maybe from the yeast counteracting in there too, or if that's just hop character.
I feel like I get some banana notes out of it in the nose. I get a little lemony.
I can see that. That's why I was curious about the yeast. I get almost like a funky banana aroma in there. There's definitely an earthiness coming through, too.
Yeah. With that, I mean, I'm smelling, like, maybe a little coriander, too. Like, a little lemon peel, a little coriander, a little banana, that skunky hoppiness. I'm thinking that this could potentially be, like, a hoppy wheat. I don't know.
I can see that.
I mean, it's kind of what it's smelling like to me. I'm getting a little... There's a little hay in there. Underlying.
I get a lot of light malts in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Hay, grass... a little bit like cereal grain.
Yeah. It smells interesting.
I'm curious.
I don't know. The skunky aspect to it is making me a little cautious because I'm just hoping that's not really coming through in the flavor.
I feel like this is going to be a love it or hate it beer.
Yeah, I have a feeling it is too. Well, let's cheers this. Hopefully it's good. Oh my God, it's really sweet. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Yeah. There is a lot of like residual sugars left over in the beer. Like the yeast didn't finish all the way out. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but
it tastes a little soapy on the finish. Does it taste kind of soapy to you?
I'm not really getting any soap. I get
it's so sugary though.
I get a funky hop characteristic coming through on there.
I do. It's and there's a bit of that earthy hay.
What kind of alcohol you think is in this?
It's got to be low. Well, you know, I don't
know. See, I want to say low because of the amount of sweetness that's left over, but I'm wondering if it's just like a higher alcohol that's well hidden and there's still just a lot of sugar left over residual that just couldn't finish out because of how high it got. I don't know.
It's tasting wheat ale-like to me. A little banana-y too. A little Belgian-ish.
I'm getting less of the banana on the flavor now. I just get kind of a funky characteristic. Not really barnyard type of quality, but just something a little different from the yeast.
The bitterness on the finish is...
It's definitely something hoppy.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like the hops are just not imparting enough flavors that you would want, and just kind of adding bitterness at the end that's... Mm-hmm. Really lingering and not in a good way. Like, I kind of feel like I may have had a battery on my tongue. Like, that kind of bitterness, like a little tingling.
I don't know if I get that much with the battery, but it's, there's something, I feel like there's a lot going on in this beer and not all of it goes together.
Yeah. Like things are trying to compete mm-hmm. within the beer.
Yeah.
It's just so sweet. I swear, God, it's so sweet. I don't know.
It's not like candy, but for like the lightness of the color of the beer that it is, you're expecting something much drier, and there's a good amount of residual sugars left over here.
Well, based on what we were smelling, and then I tasted it, I was shocked. Like, because what I was smelling and what I was tasting, there is no way I assumed that there was going to be that much sweetness mm-hmm. to it, and it was just like really shocking to my system. I mean, I feel like I have diabetes now. It's just like, I'm like Wilford Brimley. You're diabetes. The diabetes.
I'm going to go on.
Sorry to anyone who has gotten diabetes from beer. I apologize. So,
ready for B?
Yeah, let's move to B. Like we said before, it's very dark. You know, it's got around the edges kind of reddish brown.
Very low carbonation left over.
But the head is tan.
If you swirl it around in the glass, though, there is some that builds up and sticks around the edges. And this smells really, really malty, smoky. God,
yeah, it's a lot of smoke.
It smells like some kind of scotch ale.
It smells smoky. I think it smells kind of like... It smells like jerky. Like, that smoke is making it kind of smell jerky-ish. Soy sauce.
If this is Old Chub, I'm going to be mad.
I don't think it's Old Chub. It doesn't look like Old Chub to me.
Old Chub for me is a beer that I know that it's a good beer. I know it gets great reviews. Lots of people love it. It's undrinkable to me. I can't do it.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm not a fan of Old Chub either.
This is reminding me a lot of it from the aroma here.
God, it just smells like malt and beef jerky in a glass.
Yeah.
Because the amount of smoke and soy sauce...
With a little extra salt mixed
in. Yeah, stirred in. The salinity in the nose is crazy. It is very salty smelling. But I get, like, on the finish, the more I smell it, I get a little bit of a chocolatiness on the finish of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of slight. It's like a milk chocolate.
This is probably some, like, phenomenal beer, and I've already turned myself off just because of thinking of Old Chub.
I don't think it's Old Chub. I'm going to say I think it's probably some sort of like smoked porter or something like that. I mean, that's what it smells like to me. I typically have been into beers with smoke. This is a ton of smoke, so I'm hoping that it's not too crazy. But I'm ready to
try. Only, what was that, the Rausch beer that we had? I can never say the name of it.
The Ochslin Curl of Rausch beer.
That's like one of the only breweries that I can drink for the smoked beers that I've enjoyed. I've tried lots of other ones. It's too overpowering for my palate.
I already tried the beer.
Okay.
You go ahead and try it, and then you can tell me what you think, because I already know what idea I have about this beer.
Oh, wow.
That was my reaction, silently, was my reaction when you were talking.
Whoa. I actually really like that flavor.
The smoke is subtle.
Yeah.
It's
bold in the aroma,
yes.
But in the flavor, it's just a little bit.
Very subtle. You get a lot more of like a sweet milk chocolatiness than you do the smokiness. and it's nice.
I like that a lot.
The only thing...
It's almost like a salted piece of chocolate.
Yes.
The smokiness adds just a little bit, and that and the salinity in there is just very, very subtle, but you use rich chocolatey flavor.
I could see that as being kind of like a little smoke added to like a salted chocolate bonbon.
Yeah.
It is in a glass. It's nice. The only thing I think that I want a little bit more from this, because based on the color of it and based on the aroma, is maybe a little bit thicker mouthfeel to it. That's kind of what I was expecting. I can see that.
Something a little, just a richer body.
Yeah, just a little bit richer. But it's not like it's real thin. So no. It's kind of medium bodied.
It's got, that's what I was saying, when you swirl it around the glass, it's sticking. It's got some viscosity to it, but it could be a little bit more, but I like that a lot.
I'd actually say that I could handle more smoke in this. Not saying that it
I don't know
should
if I could say
it.
That, but...
I'm not saying it should have it, because I think where it is good.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I think I personally could handle some more smoke in it and still like it.
It's very subtle.
Wow. I mean, that's... And here's the thing, like, if you just kind of, like, leave your mouth closed without beer in it,
mm-hmm.
you can really, like, taste some of that smoke that's just kind of left
kinda
on your palate.
Coming back over.
Yeah.
Mm. Going back to the other one, and like after that. Tasting this one, the amount of sweetness in this first one is really shining through. There's a lot of sweet malt left in this. For what looks to be a very light-bodied beer, I don't know what style. I still can't figure out what style this is going for.
I'm getting a little bit more of like a citrusy hop flavor out of A now, mm-hmm. but it's like so sweet though too. Like
reminds me almost like there's a beer that I've tasted that seems similar to this. Lancaster, I can't remember if it's their Hop Hog or the Hop Buggy.
Okay.
Tastes kind of like this.
I think so.
Similar hop profile, a lot of sweet malt left rough. Over, but I'm not a huge fan of A.
This beer B, I don't know. This is tough. I have in my mind where I want to put A, and I'm sure longtime listeners probably know where I'm going to go with A. B is a little bit tougher to me, just because I do like it. I think it's pretty well put together, but I'm trying to figure out between two numbers where I need to go, because I don't think it's... I mean, it's not the most phenomenal beer I've ever had, but it's quite well put together. All right. Sean, do you have any more internal debating to do, or are you pretty
numbers.
Sure?
Shoot.
Yeah.
I think... forgot about this part. I was just drinking beer.
It's been too long. It's been too long. It's a 1 to 10 scale.
1 to 10. All right.
Brutal battle rating.
It's brutal battle rating. That's what I got to keep in mind. I'm trying to think of what the highest score I've given a brutal battle beer was.
You may not be able to remember.
It was probably like a 6 or a 7, I think. It was the highest I've ever given.
Woo! I just went back to the Abbasio cell. And like, drinking these beers, especially because I just had like the smoky one last, you get hit with that sour real hard.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I remember the first few sips of this, I started to get used to it.
Yeah.
It was just all over again, right back at the beginning, going back to this one.
You almost you almost have to pucker.
I give this a 7, just because...
The Abbasio cell?
Yeah. I give this a 7 just because it's so different, so well put together. Everything's really well balanced in it. There's so much depth and complexity to the sourness. I know this isn't part of it, but I really like this beer a lot.
So if this was in the tournament, or if this was in the competition, then Sean would give it a 7. So
I feel like that's fair, because I don't really know anything about this beer coming into
it.
Other than
that's
it
very
tastes
fair.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Beer A, I got to go a 2. It's not terrible. It's just I don't care for it.
That's exactly where I was putting it. 2. Unanimous A overall 2. It's not the worst beer I've ever had, but that sweetness is very out of control.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing infected. It's just it could have been a little bit more balanced, a little bit more put together. I feel like if you finished out a little bit more of the fermentation, gotten rid of some of that sweetness, would have been a little bit better.
And I will say that there are people I know who would drink that beer and like it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
There's a market for it,
definitely.
Whatever it is. All right, B, do you have an idea where you want to go with B? That's a toughie.
I was pleasantly surprised Again, that smokiness is not my thing, and you know, it's something I would drink again. I wouldn't turn it away, but I'm not gonna go out and search for it. I don't know, maybe like a 4 to 5, somewhere in there. I'm thinking somewhere in there.
I gotta
pick one of them.
We don't do 4 to 5.
I think the quality of the beer, I would go 5. I think my personal opinion, I'd go 4.
Okay. So are you going with the quality or your personal opinion?
I'll go with a 4.
Okay, so he's going with a 4. I feel like I'm a little more impressed with the beer. It's not the most phenomenal beer I've ever had. Like I said, I feel like I kind of want a little bit more thickness on the mouthfeel. That would be really nice. I was surprised at how subdued the smoke was in comparison to being on the nose. And I could take more smoke on it. It's good. It's really good. But I don't think I can give it, like, extremely crazy marks. So, oh, you were going to say something real quick?
Shipyard. Is this?
Oh,
what? I'm thinking A.
Oh, you're thinking A. Shipyard?
Might be something from Shipyard.
Okay. Well, B, I'm going to go ahead and give a 5 to B.
Okay.
I was between a 5 and a 6. I will disclose that. Yeah. I don't know.
And 6 would be a really good score on Brutal Battle.
And I just felt
I think it's a good beer. I think it's a really good beer. It's just not something that hits me personally.
Yeah.
That's why I went with the 4. I think it's a 5 or a 6 for it, based on quality of the beer.
So at 4.5, that Beer B is the winner of this episode.
Tearing it up.
We can go ahead and reveal the loser, A, with an overall of 2. So you were guessing you think this will be like a Shipyard beer?
I think it might be, yeah. I can't remember which one. I feel like I've had something from them that tasted similar to this.
I'm not going to venture a actual brewery, but I would say I do think it's supposed to be some sort of like hoppy wheat.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. A with an overall of 2 is... Siren
Evil
White
Genius
IPA by Evil Genius Beer Company.
Okay.
Evil Genius... They're out of somewhere in Pennsylvania, let me see. No, they're not, actually.
No, they are.
They're out of Bloomfield, Connecticut.
Oh, well, then they are contract brewing up there. Yeah. They're out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But this bottle's from Bloomfield, Connecticut.
They must be... I guess they're contract brewing from a couple different places, because their main location is in Pennsylvania.
I don't see an ABV on this. But white IPA, so... Basically, a hoppy wheat, kind of. I don't know. Close.
I could see a market for that, but...
I'm going to be honest. I'm not surprised. I have had quite a few Evil Genius beers and have not been very impressed.
I've had some of their stuff that I've been like, whoa, that's a really good beer. And then I've had stuff like that where it's just like,
It's like,
could do without that.
You might want to not.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's see what the winner is with an overall of 4.5 for this episode. And by feeling the bag, it is a 22-ounce that has more left in it, so we can drink some more.
All right, I'm down with that.
The winner, 4.5, is the Big Smoke Smoked Porter by 8 Wired Brewing Company.
Oh, wow. Okay, they're out of New Zealand, I believe.
Yeah, Marlborough, New Zealand.
Awesome.
And this beer was submitted by Nathan Kolasnik.
Oh, cool.
Kolasnik gave it to us for entry, and he bought it at Iron Abbey near Philadelphia.
Okay.
Apparently. That's what the note says that Rebecca gave us.
Yeah, 8 Wire makes some cool stuff.
I've never had any 8
Wire. I've had a couple of their beers. They're definitely interesting. The price point, I know, is kind of high on some of their beers, just because you're shipping it all the way from New Zealand.
Yeah.
They're playing around. The homebrew scene in New Zealand is just off the charts. And so there have been a lot of breweries that have just been picking up from them and also opening up from home brewers. So they play around with a lot of different things.
Cool. It's 6.2% alcohol.
Okay.
And then there's a little bit of information on here. It says that they took their best porter recipe and added a good measure of Bamberg Rausch malts. The smoke mingles beautifully with the rich, dark, roasted chocolate malt flavors of the porter without being overpowering. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was very present on the aroma, but completely subtle on the flavor. Just enough to know that it's there, but not to overpower the palate.
Yeah, so good job, 8 Wired. The Big Smoke Smoked Porter. That's a nice one.
Good deal.
Very good. Well, Sean, thanks for being here. Hey. You're going to be sticking around for a few more episodes. I don't know. We'll see where the night takes
us. Sounds good.
but thanks so much. And everyone, please remember to keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.